Taylor's got a sign. Here comes a Rosarena, and he just stole home. Randy a Rosarena steals home. Taylor is a lefty, had his back to him. And as soon as he came set, a Rosarena took off and is in there in a head-first slide. It is 5-0.
That was Dan Shulman yesterday. He was excited. Imagine how excited he would be today if he was in the city of Toronto and he found this out. Toronto Maple Leafs, when they open up their regular season on Wednesday after the Thanksgiving long weekend, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Got my turkey already. It's frozen. We do smoked turkey.
Be careful with that, okay?
No, we're not deep frying it. No, if you do the frozen turkey, do not deep fry your turkey, because I've seen those YouTube videos.
I don't do turkeys. There's too many things that can go wrong.
Well, the way we do it is we buy one that's basically already cooked. It's a smoked turkey, and then we defrost it.
That's probably good. She can't poison anyone with a smoked turkey, right?
Yeah, I mean,
who knows,
knock on
right?
glass.
Yeah, famous last words, but I don't think you can.
So this is an exciting day, and this is just happening. Friday of a long weekend is news dump land.
Yeah, but news dump being stuff, and this is where we've been discussing this, but before we got on here, normally this is where it's normally a government thing.
Yep.
This is where you report stuff that you don't want people to talk about, especially.
Correct.
And this is like doubling and tripling down because it is a long weekend, and it's now after 5:00. This came out at what, 4:45 or so?
Something like that.
So that's, no one's paying attention. No one wants, so this is the kind of thing, if you're trying to bury it, like bad news. This is when you tell people, it's going to cost you more money. We're going to up the booze tax or something, right? This is where you drop that one. But no, this is good news.
It is. Okay, and let's just stop beating around the bush. Here's the news.
Yes.
That capacity limits have been eliminated.
Kaput. Gone.
Concert venues, theaters, cinemas, meeting facilities, and sporting arenas if you require proof of vaccination. 100% capacity for home games for the Leafs and Raptors. This is happening immediately, and it's a good news story. But what is curious about the timing of this news dump is that maybe the people delivering it aren't sure that it's going to be received as good news.
But how would it possibly not be?
But 90% of the citizens of Toronto agree that vaccination is the correct thing to do and have done that.
Yes.
And I just saw 30,000 people at Rogers Center watch the Blue Jays win 91 games at the end of that season. I think we're ready for this. I think this is a politically popular move.
And if you aren't comfortable with it, you don't have to go.
That's correct.
Right? No one is forcing you to go to a Leaf game. It's not mandatory. So this would seem to me to be, again, a lot of this stuff has seemed a little arbitrary. Like, I know we have a science table and very smart people. People smarter than you and me are studying these things by the minute, right? But some of this stuff just seems like it's been pulled out of an orifice, right? Like, just here we go. How about today? And here's the other part. And we talked about this. It did seem, strangely enough, though, that there was a certain degree of comfort and certainty among, let's say, the sports folks, right?
MLSE,
that this was going to happen, right? I'm not sure that this is going to come as an enormous surprise to them.
No, this was originally, I think it was before training camp even opened for the Maple Leafs, there was a report that there was a memo going around the National Hockey League that there was only going to be two venues of the 32 that would not be 100% capacity. And it was curious that those two were not the two that are in Ontario. It was Montreal and it was in Vancouver, as if somebody had...
Ipso facto.
Knew that this day was going to happen, that they were not going to open up a season in the first one involving fans in a couple of years or a year and a half, that it was going to be at 100% capacity. Like, they knew that. And I suppose something could have happened in the preceding couple of weeks, right? If, in fact, the numbers of COVID cases had gone up, which would be very surprising. Again, 90% of Torontonians vaccinated.
Mm.
And we've all agreed that the vaccine works. It's not a cure, but it works.
Yes.
So it is not surprising to me at all that the 7-day average has gone down.
Yes.
Over the last 7 days. So here we are. I didn't allow myself to get to this point when we first saw the news, but like talking about it, it feels really good, and it feels like one of those days. Like, it feels almost, honestly, like that Friday that the Blue Jays returned to Rogers Center and we could see sports, even in limited form, on that Friday day against the Kansas City Royals. This is another massive, massive milestone in getting over this pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. No, it is. Again, we're talking about it at 5 o'clock before Thanksgiving weekend because right. It just arrived. Although
thank you for listening,
MLSC
by the way.
Did have a lovely press release all ready to go, too, so... That yes. Maybe they just wrote that in the last 15 minutes. It's entirely possible, right? They just had somebody craft it in the last 15 minutes or so. So, yeah, so here we go. I don't know how we declare normal. Normal's going to be different, right?
Because yeah.
Normal was different after 9/11. Certain things never changed. You know, you couldn't just walk onto an airplane. All of that stuff never changed. But it does seem to be difficult. The messaging seems to be difficult getting out of this thing, more difficult than it was getting in. Because getting in, you just said, you can't do this, you can't do that, you yep. can't do this. Be scared. Go home. Don't leave. Don't see your family. And we'll tell you when it's safe to come out. And this is the safe to come out part, and that seems to be tougher.
I think it's correlated, though.
Yeah.
Because you made people afraid, and rightly so.
Yes, and right. No, I'm not arguing with that at all, by the way.
Yeah, and especially early on when our information was so limited, but people were so conditioned early in this thing to be terrified and so hesitant to believe the good news. And, you know, it was, and that's part of human nature as well. Like, we gravitate towards the negative anyways. It's like, oh, well, the vaccine is here, but there are still breakthrough cases. Yes, that's true. But for those of us who would like to one day resume something similar to before March 11th, 2020, this is a milestone day. And, I mean, the next step is probably removal of mask mandates. And, okay, I can live with masks. And you know what? Maybe one day we can cross that bridge. That feels like almost the final barrier.
I think so. No, I lived, you know, I had a blessed almost 5 weeks in Newfoundland this summer with yeah. when the mask thing was lifted.
Yeah.
And it's back now, although I think it's, you know, I'm sure it'll get lifted again. But it was a really interesting thing. You know, that was, it felt like you were walking around with no clothes on, right? You kind of just, hang on a second. Why is everybody naked? And I think there's going to be things that continue and aspects of this that continue. And obviously but the vaccine certificate and the app or whatever that's going to turn in, vaccine passport, if you're going to yeah. travel, all of that stuff, that's a fact of life now. So that's going to be, that's built in. But this, yeah, I agree with this. This is enormously significant. I feel for the people who are running businesses. Like, again, it feels like the MLSE people maybe were ready for this.
They were ready, and they don't have to enact anything until Wednesday. Like, they got a ramp up until Wednesday yeah. for this thing. But people, at 12:01 Friday night, Saturday morning, this is enacted. So Saturday, theoretically, if you want to go to the movies, there is no capacity limit.
Yeah, and I've been to the movies since they reopened them. And
what movie did you see, by the way?
I went to see the Tammy Faye Baker. The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which I really enjoyed. That was good. Great. And I was anxious to go back to the movies, but, you know, sat in essentially an empty theater. Seats were all assigned. Place, the whole Cineplex thing was, you know, the multi-screen place was very, very quiet. And they had, you know, three people selling popcorn for the whole thing. Presumably, now I don't know if maybe tomorrow everybody, I think the James Bond movie opens tonight, right? Maybe everybody will pile in this weekend to see Daniel Craig's last turn as James Bond. I don't know. But if they do, I wonder where in the hell they're going to get the staff.
I have no idea.
You know, like, and how, like, I hope they got it. I hope all these people were given a little bit of a heads up. Because it is very hard to hire right now. It's hard to find people to work, you know, restaurants, bars, they're all struggling to find staff. It's not, you can't just go presto change-o, the place is filled. And, you know, if everybody does show up all at once, I don't know what's going to happen, but that's one thing, and yeah. That's going to be... They'll figure it out eventually, but, you know, for those of us who are looking for signs in the sky that life is coming back, this is a good one, and happy day. Thanks.
Yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
It is a happy Thanksgiving. Again, if you're just tuning in now, that capacity limits have been eliminated for indoor activities that require vaccine, proof of vaccination. So the Leafs will have 100% capacity at Scotiabank Arena on Wednesday when the open up their season against the Montreal Canadiens, and what a scene that will be. We're going to talk to Christian Jack in a couple of minutes. Yesterday was a great sports day. Holy
cow. It was pretty darn good, wasn't it? Yeah, it was pretty darn good. Although it's weird, I think you and I are on the same page with this, but of all the stuff that was going on, the fact that the my favorite part of it was what we're going to talk to Christian Jack about, you know, a soccer game from Mexico City at in the late hours of the evening that, you know, maybe not something that was you could have predicted a few months ago, but boy, it was fun.
It was so... I worked on a soccer show, so I should be careful. So I enjoy soccer, mm-hmm. right? It is not nearly my favorite sport. I think baseball would be my favorite sport. There was playoff baseball yesterday, and I didn't want to chain myself to one of the games that was happening, and it's hard to two-screen, especially with soccer. You can't two-screen a soccer game. Either you're watching soccer or you're not. You can two-screen, like, multiple baseball games and maybe – baseball and football. It was a pretty damn good football game yesterday, yes. too.
Yeah, the brief Geno Smith moment was fantastic, right? I did, yeah, no, I was flipping. I was jumping. I watched that game. I watched the NFL game. I definitely watched baseball. But I think I spent more time on the soccer game than anywhere.
Well, and I did too. And I was surprised to have done that because I definitely wanted to see the start. And they started off so well. And then Mexico just looks like, they look like an elite soccer nation looks on that first goal.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. If you look at the guys that they have playing up front and look at where they play their club football.
Yeah.
They are the FIFA rankings are, you know, you take them for what they are, but.
They're nine.
Right? Canada's 51 at the moment. They're nine.
Yeah.
They had their full squad, right? That's they were pretty much healthy and
Canada didn't.
Raring to go. Canada was seriously depleted and had never, you know, no one wins in Azteca in World Cup qualifying. No one gets a point in Azteca in World Cup qualifying. It's just a given, right? Like the number, it's an insane number, right?
Christian Jack tweeted it out yesterday. And again, we will talk to him in a couple of minutes. Mexico had been playing World Cup qualifiers in Mexico City since 1934.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the record. They'd won 63, lost 2. That was their 8th draw. 1934, Canada responsible for draw number 8 in Mexico City. And could have come away with the 3rd win.
They could have won. They outchanced them 3-1 in the first half. Legitimate. Outchanced the 3-1. The first half finished 1-1. They had a stretch in the second half where you kind of thought, okay, this is where it goes haywire.
Yep.
Because they look tired and they're playing at altitude, like serious altitude in Mexico City. And it's that this is okay. Here we come back to earth and it's unfortunate. They had a great half. And around the time when they stopped the game because of the crowd in Mexico City, once again, living up to its reputation by chanting a homophobic slurs, and they had to stop the game so that they to try and get them to stop that. Around that, on either side of that, yeah, Canada was wobbling and they looked really tired, and Mexico was turning the screws. And you thought, okay, they're going to get the second goal, and this thing's going to be all over. And instead, you know, by the end of the second half, Canada was on the front foot. They had a couple more chances. They were, you know, they didn't just park the bus and say we hope to not give up a goal. They were positive and yeah, like you know, I know people who are not soccer fans say you know, really you're cheering for a tie. A 1-1 tie is the greatest result ever, but it was a hell of a result.
Yeah, I mean, I just said it. It was the 8th draw there.
Yeah.
Since 1934, Canada becomes the first nation in CONCACAF qualifying to pick up results away in both Mexico and the United States, which they have done. Mm-hmm. They still have their home fixtures to come. One of them in November in Edmonton.
With that same Mexican team. Yeah. So we'll see how they like it. But they've got you know business to attend to. They've got a match in Jamaica tomorrow, right? Sunday. Okay, they're going to play in the heat in Jamaica on Sunday, and they're going to not have their full complement of players. And a couple of guys are suspended because of second yellow cards in that match. But the one, you know, so I like, and I'm not saying that's a, like, if you take a point out of there, you'll be really happy.
Even though they're dead last in the table.
Yeah. If you take 3 points out of there, you know, it's a party, but you get the sense that they're marshaling the resources for Panama back here next week,
yep.
which, cause you got to get 3 there.
Absolutely.
And so if you get that 3 plus the one in Mexico and whatever you get out of Jamaica, I've been, it's something I almost can't say it out loud. but they're going to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah. Well, I'll say they might not, but I'll say this, that what I've seen so far, they deserve to qualify for the World Cup. We haven't seen Panama, I guess, would be the other nation, and Panama did draw Mexico at home, though, I think that was.
They've been kind of all over the map so far, though, in this qualifying,
yeah, I think
right?
They dropped points to Honduras as well. So.
Yeah.
So who knows? But you cannot be anything but amazed at what this team did yesterday. Let's talk to Christian Jack, VP of Media and Content for the Canadian Premier League. How's it going, KJ?
Good afternoon, Ben, Steven. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. So what are your emotions and what do you take from a 90 minutes like we saw yesterday?
Yeah, I think you guys were talking about it before I came on quite eloquently, really. I think, you know, doing the broadcast last night and just kind of summing up the emotions after the game, you know, it really was a message to be delivered to those who weren't quite sure that, you know, the draw, tie, draw, whatever your preference was, you know, undoubtedly a fantastic result. You know, historically, as you alluded to, and as I said, you know, teams just don't go to Mexico in the World Cup qualifiers and get very much. So for them to go there and get it is one thing. And I know that, you know, ultimately sports are judged on wins and losses and whether you qualify and whether you don't. But, you know, I came away thinking a lot more than whether it was just a point to qualify. You know, that was a statement game again by a team that is growing in front of our eyes and building something more than just trying to qualify for Qatar. You know, sending messages that this team's going to be around for a long time with good young players and playing at the highest level in Europe. And it wasn't, as Steven said, it wasn't going in there and defending in low blocks and hoping things go their way. It was going out there and making sure that you got what you deserved. And really signaling, again, an attacking dimension to this Mexican team that they had to think very differently about the way they defended a Canadian team. And they haven't done that for a long time.
You know, KJ, John Herdman has said all along, right, that we're not going to play afraid, you know, and we're going to go out and we're going to, you know, we're not in this to survive. We're in this to win. And I you know, maybe, you know, people hear that. You hear stuff from coaches all the time and you go, sure. But I'll tell. Look, to ask, when he was hired as the coach of the men's national team, did you think, you know, we saw the kind of magic he worked with the women, but a very different, you know, different environment, different, you know, not a different sport, but it's certainly a different iteration of the sport. Did you think he could pull this off with the men's national team to, you know, to kind of build the belief that he's built, you know, in addition to whatever he's done tactically?
You know, I think anybody would say that they thought right away that he could do that would be lying. You know, I just think it. You know, it's. They've just come so far in such a short amount of time, Stephen, that, you know, I think belief is the thing. You know, the players deserve a ton of credit, but you're right to bring up Herdman in the question. You know, that they obviously he's inherited a talented, an incredibly talented group, but, you know, to get them combined together and united and this, you know, this we mentality before me mentality is never easy. Particularly in the international game, it's one thing to talk about it when you're talking about a club team who together every day. You know, this is a sport where, you know, it's really difficult to get that kind of camaraderie sometimes. And, you know, when you go away and you go back and your priority is with your club team and your club team's paying you millions of dollars and they sometimes are whispering, don't go there or play only a couple of games here and there. There's a lot of factors against an international manager. And so, no, I wouldn't say that I did believe that he could have done this so quickly. And, you know, as you alluded to there, it's you know, when you said they're going to qualify for the World Cup or they may qualify for the World Cup, all of us who are in charge of talking about this and have a pleasure of broadcasting the games, I think we're only now starting to realize over the last few months what the players have thought for about 6 months and that this is a realistic possibility here.
Well, not only that it would be a disappointment for them not to qualify at this point, Christian. Like, is that overstating it? They're in third, and it's only a point. They're up on Panama, and I guess Wednesday will be so crucial in how we feel about this. But it feels like them not finishing not just top four, because the fourth team plays a playoff to get into the World Cup. Like not finishing top three feels like a disappointment from what we've seen so far through four matches.
I think, Ben, that's certainly the case internally. It's certainly not the tone I'm taking externally at the moment. There's a long way to go here. There's a lot of football matches to be played. And although they played, as I said last night, again, at the broadcast, that U.S. and Mexico away are the two most difficult teams to play talent-wise, they've still got to go to Panama. They've got to go to Honduras. They've got to go to Costa Rica. They've got to go into places where they've not gone before. as a group. And yes, they continue to pass all the tests because of belief. And they played all these Kings of CONCACAF and succeeded and played very well. But there's a lot of football to go yet. And, you know, there's going to be a time, and it's coming, by the way, it's coming on the 13th this week at BMO, where there's the expectation on this team to turn around and win football matches. And that is a very different mentality in any sport. It's one thing to go into these environments and know you can play the card and say, and there's a lot of boxing analogies this week, which I'm sure Stephen will appreciate from John Herdman, that, you know, you can scar an opponent many times, you know, an underdog going up against a true heavyweight. But what happens when you're the heavyweight? What happens when you have to win a game you're expected to win? And that's the next big frontier for this group, you know, whether it's Jamaica away with a much-changed team, I'm not quite sure. Panama on the 13th on Wednesday is an enormous task for them. And the closer they get to that line, as you alluded to, that third place line of automatic, the more and more pressure is going to be poured on this group that they've never felt it before. So I'm not saying they're not going to do it. I firmly believe more than ever that I think they can do it. But there's a lot of football to be played yet.
Oh yeah, no, there is. And I'm just getting excited. So I'm that's why I'm saying that. But
it's a great
game
yesterday.
No, I am really excited. And
we're all allowed to be. Trust me. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, you're right. So you're right. If they take care of business at home, which is, you know, a big part of this qualifying process, then, you know, then you don't have to go and work miracles in San Pedro Sula or something, right? So you've got Panama, you got to get 3 points at BMO, and you've got to take care of business at home. This match in between, you know, the last night and the Jamaica match. So what do they at this stage, KG? What do they need to get out of that? Because they're going to be depleted, not just because, you know, they didn't have some guys available to them, but they lost a couple more guys through suspension, second yellow cards, which, you know, again, we did talk to John Herdman earlier today about that a little bit. And, you know, sometimes getting the yellow card in that situation rather than in the next game, the second yellow, where you would then be suspended for Panama, maybe that's not so bad. But it's kind of a, you know, it's going to be hot. The Jamaican team has, you know, not played particularly well so far in this qualifying. Do they need to get a point out of that?
I would say they don't need to, no. I mean, particularly after getting a point last night, you know, I was under the impression that going into this window of games, 4 points for me would be a success, and they've got one. So, you know, look, I'm not going to say it's gravy. I think they need to continue to put steps forward. So, look, I expect a number of changes for the team. You alluded to it. They need their star players to play at BMO on Wednesday. You know, in the first window, we had Alphonso Davies leaving, and certain players couldn't play, and Kyle Lahren wasn't fit for that third game, and I think that, you know, I don't think this. I know that they believe they have to put their best foot forward and the best version of themselves against Panama at BMO on Wednesday night. So, to answer your question, I think firmly that certainly the yellow cards to Tejon Buchanan and Richie Lurie came at the right time, because you couldn't have played them in that game anyway because you needed to play them on Wednesday night. So now you wipe the slate clean a little bit and they go back to zero. So, look, it's an opportunity, is it not, to go away from home and try and get something. Mm. What we're learning and what we've known for a long time in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying is that points away from home are very difficult. Very difficult to get in CONCACAF. Over the last ten years trying to qualify for the World Cup, combined in 90 games, has been 13 away wins. You know, it's less than 15% of a win percentage away from home in CONCACAF. So, look, if they can go there and get a point, if you offer John Herdman 0-0 before the game, he'd walk off the field. So, you know, I think if they can get a point, that would be fine, keep the momentum going. But as you alluded to, Jamaica have had some problems here. Yeah. They've got a lot of key players. Mikel Antonio's not returned from England. He didn't come this time. Leon Bailey, the Villa player, their best player, in my opinion, is injured. They can't win games. They got beat last night by the United States. And they're burying themselves pretty quickly here in a very competitive group. So they'll have a lot on the line. So, look, it's an opportunity for them to go out there, I think, without a lot of pressure and express themselves again. And they certainly like doing that.
Well, and I guess we'll find out the answer to this next question on Wednesday. How many people show up at BMO Field to watch Canada play Panama? But I know for myself, my thought process going into this final stage of World Cup qualifying was that, okay, Let's see what happens. Like I'm cautiously optimistic, but I've had the rug pulled out from under me before. Like, do you think that sentiment is perhaps evaporating from fans of this program?
Well, I think the fans of the program have been very loyal for a long time, and they've had a lot of time to be patient and you know, even when the success is happening, there's a bit of a disbelief right now from this group, because it's like, how come we keep doing this? This is not the right, this is not the normal emotions we're used to hearing and feeling with this group. You know, they're used to eventually getting, you know, their heart pulled out. So I think they've been, trepidation has been the word for them for a while, but they are now understanding that this is a very different Canadian group than we've seen in the past. Yes, Canadians have won the Gold Cup, and they've been to a World Cup in the past, the men's program. But anybody I speak to within the game, and this is no disrespect to anybody of the greats who pulled on that shirt in the past, you can't find anybody right now who'll disagree with the statement that this is the best and most talented group this Canadian team has ever produced. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you've got players like Alphonso Davies and Jonathan David producing, and like Atiba Hutchinson and Kyle Lahren at the Champions League level, the true highest level of the sports, you know, you're getting international recognition, and you're getting a lot more people understanding there's a lot of respect for this group. So I think the fan base, to answer your question, are fully buying in. They've been on it for a while, and they deserve everything they get. And as ever with the sport in this country, the welcome mat is out for everybody else. You know, people are starting to understand there's no greater two words in our sport put together that has more power than World Cup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm certainly getting people messaging me who've not paid attention to this sport saying, I hear Canada might make it to the World Cup, and I might go watch a game. And that's the pull. That's the pull of a World Cup. And, you know, anybody who's on the fence, I know the great NHL season starting up soon as well, but anybody who's on the fence, go down to BMO and watch this team. It's an exciting team to get on board and watch.
Yeah, 100% capacity next week as well. It's outdoors at BMO. Christian, thanks for doing this.
Always a pleasure, gents. Keep up the great work. Enjoy
thanks.
It.
Yeah, you too. Christian Jack, VP of Media and Content for the Canadian Premier League. So before I get to that. So that we're doing a Canada soccer story in like the first half hour of this program.
Yes, we are.
Which I debated at first, but I think fast forwarding to a couple of months from now and going into November, where there will be a World Cup, and if indications are anything, then Canada will be there. It will not be a question. Like it will be no doubt that it'll be one of the biggest sports stories that we talk about, even with the Leafs and Raptors starting up their seasons in November. It's going to be one of the great sporting accomplishments in the history of this country.
Yeah, if they make it. I'm backed off slightly here. If they make it.
Too late.
Yeah, I don't know. I've kind of thought this one through a few times, Ben, over, you know, but what, so what would it be like? Because, I remember 1986, the one time Canada was there. But, you know, Canada, like the whole point is everything here was different in 1986. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, we're, the sports culture in this country has really changed since 1986. And especially the soccer culture has changed in this country since 1986, right? It used to be a thing that, you watched Graham Leggett on Saturday morning, right? You know, if you were a fan, but it was a niche thing. Right. And, you know, people had kind of allegiances, you know, in the old country somewhere, whatever old country it was. And, you know, various leagues kind of came and went here. And you know, Canada qualified and, when the World Cup was harder to qualify, to be honest, in 86 than it is now. And, you know, played world powers and, you know, we didn't score, but that was a huge moment. There was no carryover. There's no follow through from that. That was it. For Canada, the World Cup is the biggest sporting event in the world, period. It's bigger than the Olympics, bigger than the Super Bowl, bigger than anything you want to name. Like, it's bigger.
Yeah.
And, like, the World Cup for Canadians watching the World Cup, like watching the Euros or watching the Champions League, it's become a huge thing anyway. You look at the numbers, look at the ratings, right? People tune in with no Canada, tune in to watch those tournaments in enormous numbers now, and people are way more soccer literate than they were. And they follow, you know, they follow their local teams in MLS, or they follow their local teams in the Canadian Premier League. Like, this is a soccer culture now. It really, really is. So take that. So combine that and the draw of a big tournament with an actual home rooting interest where you don't have to say, boy, you know, really, do I want to cheer for Italy here? You can have a real, honest to God, you can wrap yourself in the flag like you do when you watch hockey.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right? You can wrap yourself in the Maple Leaf this is not just setting people up to, you know, step on the rake and have it hit them in the face, right? These guys, Alphonso Davies is one of the best players in the world. Well, he's from Edmonton.
This is what I was going to say. It's, if you don't believe or you're afraid of, like you said, stepping on the rake and having it hit you in the face, Well, you're not seeing what the rest of CONCACAF is seeing. Because look at the way the Mexicans approached that game. Mm-hmm. Like, they were cautious. And look at the way they watched Alfonso Davies when he touched the ball, understanding how dangerous a player he was and mm-hmm. responsible for the assists on the Jonathan Osorio goal. The rest of North America understands what's happening in this country in regards to soccer. It's unbelievable, but it really does feel like it's happening.
It's happening. And, you know, there will be World Cup games on this continent in 2026. There'll be yeah. World Cup games in this country in 2026. But if we qualify legit, straight up, 2022, I don't know. A sky's the limit, right? Like, I think we're going to experience something we've never experienced before.
Yeah. So, there will be no question as to whether soccer should be in the opening block of a sports
there it is. We have now justified it, so yeah. There you go. But I don't care. I don't need to justify it. It's just true.
It is. Absolutely is. You know what else is true? Is that the Dodgers and Giants have one of the best rivalries in all of baseball. Never met in a playoff series before. That changes tonight. We will talk to former Blue Jays general manager J.P. Ricciardi, who is currently special advisor to the president of baseball operations with those aforementioned San Francisco Giants. He joins us next. It's the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Going to mention it a couple of times today. By the way, it is the Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt. But yes, capacity limits have been eliminated. 100% capacity for indoor events. That includes the Toronto Maple Leafs. That includes the Toronto Raptors. So proof of vaccination required and 100% capacity on Wednesday when the Maple Leafs host the Montreal Canadiens. Currently watching the Astros just hand it to the White Sox.
Yeah, we should actually acknowledge this. Unless you have the MLB network, you can't watch this game, right?
I don't think
so,
you can.
So if you can't get this, don't blame us or Sportsnet. This is not our it's not our fault. We are not preventing you. Just I know because people do that, right?
Oh yeah, I'd hate to see Jamie Campbell's tweets today. His yeah. replies.
Where's the game?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not on us, guys. Like, but it is. But the Astros are thumping the LaRussas right now. Is it 9-4?
Yeah, I think it's 9-4. So things are looking good, I would say, for the Astros. Things are looking pretty good for the Rays as well, who play later tonight against the Red Sox game 2 after they took game 1 in shutout fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that Rays team is, I know you're supposed to, you know, it's the nerd team where it's, hey, it's all about spin rate and the charts and taking starters out when they have a chance to do something historic. That team is fun to watch.
Yep. I know they were last night for sure.
Randy Arozarena is one of the most fun players in all of baseball. And the historic nature of his game yesterday, it's ridiculous. Like, for my money, there's no better play in all the sports than a straight steal at home. And that was, I know it was not the first one ever. Javi Baez, so here are the steals of home in the playoffs in recent vintage. Javi Baez stole home, but mm-hmm. the catcher tried to pick him off at third base, and he came home. So that's not a straight steal at home. Before then, Marquise Grissom stole home to walk it off for the Indians in 97. That was a failed squeeze. You know what the last true steal of home in a playoff game? 1955 World Series Jackie Robinson
wow.
game 1.
And that's maybe the most yep. famous steal of home in baseball history, right? That's yep. the one you've seen that. Yep. You have seen that film.
He might have been out.
Might have been out, but still. But still. Yeah, it's completely awesome. Boy, the Red Sox, Chris Sale better be great, right? Cuz yes. they're throwing everything. They threw two starters last night.
Yep.
Among the pitchers who showed up at Eduardo Rodriguez really quick hook, Nick Pivetta later in the game. They need Chris Sale to be awesome to yes. have any shot in that series now. And, yeah. Man, I thought that was interesting that they kind of threw everything at the wall yesterday just trying to hold them off. And,
and they hit a couple of balls on the screws. Six of them at over 102 miles an hour. But unfortunately for them, the Rays also know how to position their fielders because they went right into gloves.
Yes.
They're pretty good at that. All right, let's talk to J.P. Ricciardi, special advisor to the president of baseball operations for the San Francisco Giants and, of course, former Blue Jays general manager. How's it going, J.P.? Thanks for doing this.
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. So, okay, this is the first time these two teams are ever going to meet in a postseason series. They played games 1-6-3 to decide divisional winners, but Giants-Dodgers has never happened in a series before. I know you're a Massachusetts guy. Can you rank this or evaluate this rivalry compared to Yankees-Red Sox, which is the one we're all very familiar with?
Yeah, I think the difference with this is for those of us on the East Coast, we're probably more familiar with the Yankees and the Red Sox. But being with a West Coast team now and being out in San Francisco so much, you really see what this rivalry is. I don't think it takes a second seat to Boston, New York, especially when you're out on the West Coast. So, and you got to remember, I mean, the history of these guys, they go back to, they both left New York at the same time. They played against each other in New York, and then they left at the same time and went out to California at the same time. So really, the rivalry is deep, and it goes a long way.
Well, and 107 wins versus 106 wins, you know, that's pretty rich too, JP. Apparently, if your Giants win the World Series this year, they're gonna have to turn the lights out in Vegas. Did you read about that? That the sports books are all gonna crash?
I did read that today.
Yeah, so there's more motivation. But talk to us a little bit about this kind of spectacular, like 107 games is not a fluke. You know, that's not, you can't just luck your way into 107 games. But how this team, the construction of this team and how this, you know, the best team in baseball was put together this year.
Well, I think what we tried to do was just create as much flexibility as we could on a limited roster in the start of the year. And I think the creativity from the front office, in acquiring players and allowing them to be able to be platoon type guys or in some way, you know, pick up the slack for some other guys. I think that was really, really instrumental in us having success. But I think you have to go back to Longoria, Crawford, Belt, and Posey, our four veteran players, all playing really, really well and having bounce back seasons. And I think, you know, being able to support them and allow them to have some time to let their bodies rest and have the supporting players around them has been a big plus as to why we've had a lot of success. And, you know, our pitching staff has been great. It's been managed well. So we're a little bit like Tampa. Not as athletic as Tampa, but interchangeable in some areas like Tampa and able to match up like Tampa. We're not the same team as Tampa, but probably built along the lines of having creativity and flexibility within your lineup.
Yeah, I feel like you guys are a little bit older than the Rays are average age.
Definitely that. Yeah.
Oldest,
which throws the age thing out the window.
Yep. Oldest lineup in the NL by a year and a half. What I'm interested in, really just like the impact of managing in baseball in 2021 in particular, and Gabe Kapler and what kind of an impact he had on this team, because it feels like the job of a manager is very different today than it would have been 10 years ago. And the amount of autonomy that a manager has is very different than 10 years ago. Like, what is the impact of the guy who's sitting on the bench and writing out the lineup card every day?
Well, I guess I would come back to the veteran players. I think if you look around, the teams that have solid veteran guys are really making an impact. And I think having Posey, Crawford, Belt, and Longoria on this club has really helped Gabe as a manager, because they have credibility as players. They've won before. These guys got 2 and 3 world championships under their belt already. I think that them buying into Gabe and Gabe buying into them, I think that's what baseball's become now. I think the manager has to be someone that can manage personalities, can manage, not so much the game as much as managing workload and just being in, simpatico with the players as to what they need, when they need it, how they need it. So, the job has definitely changed. Actually, every job in baseball has changed. And I think Gabe's done a really good job of getting himself into the players and really buying into what they want to do and having a system and a plan in place in which everybody's on the same page. So Gabe's worked really hard to do that, and the staff has done a good job.
You know, it's funny. You're saying that, and I was listening to Kapler's obviously, Gabe's obviously a new age guy, right? He's very of the moment in terms of how he runs a ball club. And I'm sitting here behind me on television. I'm watching Dusty Baker manage against Tony La Russa. Right? So,
well, yeah, you know what, though? It just goes to show you, though, that it takes all kinds to build teams. I'll give you a perfect example. Look at the Blue Jay lineup, right? The Blue Jay lineup, 1-6, is a solid, proven lineup. They have a guy at first. They have a guy at second. They have a guy at short. They have a guy in left, center, and right. Their team is totally different than our team. We don't have a set lineup. So they put their team together totally different, and they had success, and they had a good club. So there's different ways to do it, and there's doesn't mean you have to do it one way. And I think Dusty and Tony is still out there and some other guys. I think it just goes to show you the great thing about baseball. It can be done in different ways.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know what, that's what baseball fans would like to get back to when it comes to offense, right? And that's probably what Theo Epstein is going to think about when he's talking about instituting potential rule changes to the game, is diversity. That, you know, strikeouts and home runs and walks, okay, if everybody's doing it, it's kind of boring. The idea that you can do it multiple different ways, that you can be like a 2015 Royals where you're not hitting a bunch of home runs and you're putting the ball in play, isn't that what we're trying to strive towards, JP? That you can still, there'll still be the big bopper home run teams that strike out and walk a bunch, but that that you can do it some other different way as well.
Well, I think the one thing with the strikeout and the walks, and it'll be interesting to see as the playoff goes, the teams that don't put the ball in play usually get beat because good pitching stops them. And I think when you look at certain teams, you know, the Yankees being an example, they were built for home runs and strikeouts, and I think they left a lot of guys on base because they couldn't move the ball at certain times. But then you look at Houston and you look at Tampa and you look at the Dodgers that have a lineup that can put the ball in play a lot more. They're going to create a lot more opportunities to score in the playoffs, where one run is the difference sometimes. And I think, you know, sometimes you build a team for 162 games and they're a power walk club, you can get, you can win the marathon. But I think you struggle sometimes to win these playoff type games because it comes down to sometimes just moving the ball.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a ton of sense, JP. Look, I wish this was a best of seven. That's the one thing I really do, because it's
we do too.
It's just begging for it, right? What you know, there's so little to choose between those two teams. These two teams. What do you think this series is going to turn on?
You know, I would say that, I mean, you guys have watched sports your whole life. It's always the things you don't predict. Like, everybody thinks, oh, Scherzer is going to dominate. It usually comes down to someone you don't think is going to do something that does something that ends up swinging a series. And, you know, sometimes you got Garrett Cole on the mound and he doesn't go as far as you think he's going to go. You got Scherzer on the mound. He doesn't. I mean, the guys you kind of count on sometimes don't come through, and the guys you don't count on do come through. And I think that's what always swings a series that's so evenly balanced. Someone just plays really, really well that you didn't think would carry the torch. And, you know, it could be a Wilmer Flores, it could be a Mike Yastrzemski, you know, it could be someone along those lines that gets hot and does some really good things. So I think whatever lesser type player, so to speak, steps up might be the difference in this series.
I think we're all expecting it to be close, though. 10-9 was the season series that your team won over the Dodgers. One game separated you through 162 games. I can't wait for that thing to get started tonight. JP, thanks so much for doing this.
Okay, no problem, guys. Take care.
Yeah, you too. JP Ricciardi, special advisor to the president of baseball operations with the San Francisco Giants, former Blue Jays general manager. Yeah, you can play 162 games. You can play 19 times between the two of you. It can come down to one game in the season series between the two of you, and that one game could be the difference between winning a division and not winning a division and having home field advantage in now a five-game series between these two teams.
Ain't baseball great?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, so yeah, you may have to stay up a little later than you're comfortable with, right? What's first pitch on this game is, what, 9?
Yeah, it's about 10 o'clock, like 9:45 or
so,
something.
So I'm just going to say this, it's probably going to be worth it. So
yeah.
This is, I don't know that this is, the winner of this series is going to win the World Series. There's a lot of things can happen between now and then, but there's a lot to like about this series.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I can't wait for it. By the way, again, 100% capacity happening as of midnight tonight, well, 12:01 in the city of Toronto for concert venues and meeting places and sporting facilities, including Scotiabank Arena. This just coming down the pipe from Shams Charania of The Athletic, that New York City has determined that the Brooklyn Nets practice facility, HSS Training Center, is a private office building clearing Nets all-star Kyrie Irving to practice at home. So that was, you know, didn't expect that wrinkle. Maybe I should have, because you go back to that Rolling Stone article and his aunt talked about the fact that, hey, you know, he built this franchise despite the fact he's played like 60 total games in his Nets career, that they're going to have to acquiesce to what Kyrie Irving wants, well, you still can't play in the games yet at home. But I guess maybe that they'll figure something out for that, because I did not expect this level of bending over backwards for Kyrie Irving. He can practice in Brooklyn because their training center is a private building.
It does sort of seem like a rule just made for him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure what would be the other, who are the other people whose workplaces would be welcomed into said similar workplaces. It's fascinating. That one. Yeah, that's one we're going to be talking about for a while.
Yes, we are. And yeah, maybe we'll follow up, and maybe there'll be some fallout news from that. Also, I was going to mention this to JP when we had him on the line, but maybe didn't apply to him, and maybe didn't want to divulge state secrets when it comes to their organization and how they would deal with this. But Alex Verdugo today was revealed is interested in an off-season throwing program, and he apparently throws 97.
Yeah.
He's interested. And I talked to Rick Ankiel about this a couple of months ago with the Shohei Ohtani thing, about how Major League Baseball might respond to the next person who wants to try pitching on the side, or, you know, because when he was coming up as a pitcher, they wouldn't let him hit.
That's right.
Well, apparently there has been pushback that Alex Cora said, yeah, that's not going to happen. But if he can throw 97, like, is this kind of disappointing that the Red Sox might push back to this? He's even saying, I'm not Shohei Ohtani. I would never expect to be a guy that wins an MVP award because I can do both things at an elite level. And even talked about, even if I start my throwing program this offseason and I want to make the transition to a two-way player, it's probably not until 2023 that I could effectively pitch in the major leagues. And how effective I could be, I don't know. He's even talking about just pitching in blowouts.
I wonder when the last time was he pitched. When is the last time you pitched?
It was like high school, I think.
Because, you know, like, look, I know it's changed now. Like, because elite athletes, elite players are identified as what they are. And, you know, if you're a pitcher, you're in one of those programs.
You get specialized early.
Yeah, very early. But, you know, Dave Steeb was playing in the outfield when they went to scout him.
Yeah.
And then they brought him in to pitch in the middle of a game, right? It happened in college games, right? It happened all the time, right?
Marcus Stroman played shortstop for Duke.
Yeah, your best guys. A lot of the time, your best athlete would do both. But, you know, at a certain point, the paths diverge. I can see, though, if I was the Red Sox, I'm not sure. I would kind of want him to concentrate on his number one job.
Yeah, I guess if you brought it locally and, okay, say Jose Bautista was playing currently for the Toronto Blue Jays, because this is something
he did try and pitch, though, right? He did try and pitch. Wasn't that one of his comeback plans?
He might have gotten into a game with the Dominican Republic.
Yeah,
I know he was at the Olympics for the Dominican Republic. I don't know if he was pitching, but obviously people remember his arm in right field as one of the elite ones in the game.
It was, and then until then it wasn't.
But the idea that you could have somebody that fills a roster spot and a half, even if it's just, you know, not in a blowout, but it's like a 5-run game and you're trying to protect your bullpen, you're trying to protect those arms out there, and you can take one of your outfielders and throw them on the mound for six outs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be extremely valuable. And I was hopeful, especially after talking to Rick Ankiel and what it was like before, if you tried to be a two-way player, I was hopeful that this Shohei Ohtani would open people's eyes and that we'd have more, that people would be more open to this possibility. And I know there was a two-way player, I think, just drafted a couple of years ago. So at least that part of it is a little more open. But this is a bummer. I want to see Alex Verdugo try this thing. If he says he can throw 97, that's a start.
It's kind of, yeah, it's where. Like, it's not necessarily the nice out, it's the where part, right? Isn't that the important part?
Yes, I guess that's relatively important if he can paint the corners. When we come back, we're going to talk to Frank Saravelli of DailyFaceoff.com. This Hurricanes-Canadians rivalry, it's getting more and more interesting. It started with Jesperi Kotkaniemi being signed to the offer sheet.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. And then it continued with the social media war after that.
Love that part.
And apparently it's continued because the Montreal Canadiens have raised the red flag on the Hurricanes, who only played 4 preseason games. The CBA says you got to play 6. So
who's counting?
Apparently the Canadiens. We'll talk to Frank next. It is The Fan Drive Time. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.